behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, and welcome to Car Stuff. I'm Scott.
And I am Ben. As always, we're joined by someone from our super producer crew. Today we have Matt the Madman Frederick. And we'd like to give a shout out to our coworker Dylan, who is our audio editor. One thing, Scott, before we get started.
Okay, what's that?
I've got a nickname for you.
Okay, good. What is this?
Scott,
well, maybe good.
Scott the Snake Slayer Benjamin.
The Snake Slayer. Okay, well, this goes to a conversation we were just having moments ago. I have discovered a rather large snake in my yard. You know, at times I've spotted this thing. And this weekend I'm going to have to go and hunt that snake or maybe find a new home for that snake. Either way, I'm not sure. But it's got some... I don't know. What would you say about the markings on that snake, Ben? It's ominous, maybe.
Right.
It looks like it's got some crazy markings on it. I'm going to have to look this up before I make any contact with this snake.
A lighter brown top and then a bottom. It has a darker brown striping on the bottom, but they're relatively fat stripes.
Yeah, it's I really don't even know anything. I'm going to have to go with a kind of a blurry photo that my daughter snapped while she was out walking the dog.
Yeah.
And that's the whole purpose of this, because I've got a small dog, very small dog,
mm-hmm.
and he's very inquisitive about this type of thing. So if he sees that moving, he's going to go for it. And I don't want him to be bit, of course. He's like 9 pounds, my dog.
Right.
The snake is probably 9 pounds. It's a big snake.
Pretty big.
It's a big snake.
Hey, it's interesting because off air, I was looking at some of this. There are only 6 types of poisonous snakes in Georgia.
Oh, well, the odds are pretty good then.
The odds are ever in your favor, Hunger Games style.
Not 9 pounds, by the way. This is it's like a 4-foot snake.
But still.
Yeah,
if it bites, it's gonna hurt.
Well, I'm gonna try to avoid that.
Do you have a snake bite venom kit?
I don't. I don't even have an acceptable bag to put the thing in. You know, like you have the snake sticks in the bag and everything.
Yeah, you don't have a.
I don't really have a plan right now, Ben. I just discovered this thing last night. I've been watching it. We got a small pond in the back, and it really small, but it's got rocks around it that it suns itself on these rocks, and I think it's eating my frogs because I've got frogs in there, maybe like big bullfrogs. And I believe the snake is eating those and maybe chipmunks or something like that. You know, in the
right.
Air.
Well, snakes are good for ecology. And also, this brings us to a weird question. You probably didn't know I was going to throw this at you on the air. Have you ever eaten snake?
Oh, wow. I don't think that I have. I've been to a few places that have, you know, some adventurous fare.
Sure.
You know, where they have,
fried rattlesnake bites.
Well, yeah, like crocodile tail and mm-hmm. or alligator bites or whatever, yeah. You know, stuff like that in Florida. And I guess it's all regional. So, you know, if you go out west, you might be able to find some rattlesnake bites or something like that. But, I've never tried it. Have you?
Yeah, I ate some snake when I was a kid. More of a novelty trying
was it like,
sort of thing.
Anaconda jerky or something like that?
You know, honestly, I don't have the best memory. I know it was fried. I don't
fried,
know
of course
sort of
it was
snake
fried.
Or,
yeah.
Snake was.
Do you remember if it was like tough or was it like red meat or what did it taste like? Do you remember? Did it taste like chicken?
I remember it. I remember it did kind of taste like chicken, actually. And maybe, keep in mind, of course, this is before I was even 11. I was a kid. So, it was one of those novelty things, but I have an idea for you, my friend.
What's that?
What if you handle the snake in a humane way, make sure it's not on the endangered list or something,
mm-hmm.
kill it, right, get some other snakes, and then start a food truck.
Just get some other snakes?
Scott's Snake Shack.
A Snake Shack food truck. Oh, that's an interesting idea, but a nice transition into today's topic, which, by the way, if you haven't already, please don't tune out at this point, because I promise you, food trucks are far more interesting than you think they are right now. And hopefully you found that out in the past with some of our other topics that, you look at the topic and you might think, I don't know if that's really for me, but hopefully we'll take it in some directions that might be interesting to you, hopefully.
Right. But
there's way more to these things than you might think, and we're going to explore a lot of different angles here, mm-hmm. and it's an idea that came from a listener.
Yes, not just any listener, ladies and gentlemen, our old pal, Rudy.
Yeah, Rudy Smith, and Rudy Smith wrote in, and I'll be honest with you here, Ben. There's a lot to read here, but I'm going to kind of skim through some of it. I looked through all these links, and this is where a lot of our information came from today. So Rudy's suggestion came to us back in August of 2015, and he says, Scott, Ben, and Noel, there are a lot of food trucks in Minneapolis right now, and most other big cities, and most other big cities in the U.S. as well. Their design and complications are quite interesting. Now, that's what kind of grabbed me. Their design and complications. So that's an interesting angle that we're going to explore here today, I promise. And he says, and yes, knowing us, of course, he says, and yes, some of them are used in the preparation of pizza, which
is
vitally important to you and I. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of really excellent angles to handle here. And I mean, I'll just kind of breeze through this list, and we'll get to these as topics throughout the whole show. But, you know, floor plans are mentioned, you know, some of the best food truck designs, I guess. Mm-hmm. Then there's the occasional fire or explosion. And yes, there are many articles here about, you know, like 11 homes damaged in food truck explosion, Philadelphia food truck explosion. There's a lawsuit pending for, you know, where propane tanks, you know, weren't properly inspected and things like that. So, you know, catching fire, that type of stuff. So there's a lot of, peril in owning a food truck as well, I guess. Or being near one, maybe. Yeah. Possible. And, let's see. The other thing is unusual designs. We mentioned this already, but, you know, it's like some weird food truck designs. I've seen a few on the streets here. There's a pizza trailer, because we're not going to talk about just trucks. We're going to talk about trailers. We're going to talk about carts. We're going to talk about a few different things. Maybe mostly focus on trucks, but these trailers are a big part of it now as well. He says the barbecue guys are the real innovators. And then there's like these, you know, breakaway barbecue grill pits and, you know, just the crazy design, like a fire truck barbecue, design. Which is an interesting one.
Yeah, I saw that one.
Yeah, too. Really interesting. And then complications. And complications to me are one of the most fascinating parts. Food safety. And I know it doesn't sound fascinating now, but it is interesting. Food safety, transporting cooked and partially cooked food. You know, cause some of these truck owners are cooking while they're driving down the road, which is, you know, they have a staff in the back cooking as they're going.
And it depends on the state, as we'll learn.
Yeah. And imagine that with like, you know, a deep fryer or something in the back. Mm-hmm. So. Again, that's another thing. There's the complex world of driving around with a deep fryer in the back of the truck. You've got to figure out how to contain all that so you're not losing not only profits, but something that's potentially very hazardous in the truck.
Oh, sure.
There's the legal angle, you know, like where are you supposed to be? And, you know, Department of Health issues and concerns and things like that. So another interesting angle. And then who builds these food trucks? There's a company or there's several companies really that put these together. I was going to add to this a few different things as well. There was a movie recently about food trucks.
Oh, yeah, with Jon Favreau?
Yeah, Jon Favreau, and I will mess up the names of the actors if I even try.
It's called Chef.
Yeah, Chef is the name of the movie from 2014, and I watched it. It's about a chef who quits his job at some popular L.A. restaurant. Mm-hmm. I think kind of hooks up with like his best friend and his ex-wife and his son to create this food truck business eventually out of Miami, and then he makes a journey of it, like coming back from Miami to LA, and becomes very, you know, wildly popular along the way. It's really an interesting it's a quick version of how this all happens for people who really do it. But also think about festivals where you see food trucks you know, of course we're going to talk about regulations, but some are really, really simple. Some are super complex with what they cook. You'll see places like cooking lobster and things on board, when others are just making grilled cheese and fries. Not that that's any...
Not there's anything wrong with
no,
it.
No, not that it's any less difficult or anything. It's just, it's you know, simple versus complex.
And also there's we'll talk about the interesting specificity that some food trucks have, which arrives out of necessity as much as it arrives out of marketing.
And how they can adapt and how they're able to adapt much faster than a brick-and-mortar restaurant. We'll talk about that, too. So, and okay, there's also the social media aspect of this whole thing now. That's a big part of this as well. There's really a lot to discover here when you talk about food trucks. And so hopefully this will be hopefully we'll get to everything we just mentioned, but hopefully this will be a little bit more interesting than you thought. And I guess we can start with food truck history, because we like to start with history of things, right?
Yeah. Okay. So food truck history, we can look at it several different ways. It's relatively murky. You know what? I'm going to call it officially a fool's game to try to figure out the first time in history somebody fed someone off of a rolling contraption, because that's ancient history.
Well, how ancient? talking like 17th century here in the United States. Now, this is in the U.S. only. I've only got U.S. history here.
Right, exactly, because that's the only way we can really find a good starting point is to look at a specific country, and of course, we have the most information about the U.S.
Exactly right. And of course, we're biased because we're here in the United States as well. So that's typically where we tend to focus if it's something that we need to narrow down like this.
A lot of the local laws I'm going to complain about later in the show also are based in Georgia.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Well, that makes sense because we have experience with that, right?
Yes.
So I understand. You might not have guessed the 17th century was when this all started, but it did. It started with, you know, push carts and chuck wagons and things like that. And you might think, well, where the heck was it started in the 1600s in the United States? Well, you got to remember that New York was settled in 1624.
Right.
So, you know, street carts and push vendors in New York City, right away from the very beginning, you know, the police and the local authorities had a problem with this. You know, people selling food on the streets. It wasn't something that was typically done in the United States up until this point. It was usually a brick and mortar place. You go to a public house and eat, or something,
sure,
or a steakhouse,
yeah,
or you know, whatever. You would dine out in an establishment that was a permanent location, not something that you could grab on the go.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So this existed in the late 1600s, right?
Well, I guess late 1600s, around 1691, I think, was when they started creating ordinances against these things in 1691.
And that's one of the first legal records, if not the first legal record, of a government attempting to handle or regulate this sort of industry. I like that you mentioned chuck wagons here, because
I bet I'm going to have to interrupt just for a second, because I think we need to stay in the 1700s, if that's all right.
All right.
And there's a reason, because by 1707, street food vendors were completely banned in New York City in an effort to prevent congestion and complaints from retail stores and restaurants. And this is still a fight that they fight today.
Oh, yeah. Restaurants and mobile establishments have loggerheads often.
They don't necessarily get along. They would they would butt heads on a lot of different issues. And it's rare when they do get along. But again, by 1707, these street vendors were completely banned. So to get, you know, despite that, they would still do this. I mean, it was like kind of a, you know, under the radar type thing that would happen still. And of course, you know, there's a lot of, you know, construction workers and mm-hmm. people working in the garment industry and things like that in downtown New York at the time. And a lot of the popular street foods were things like pretzels and breads and meat pies and fruits and sandwiches. It's just by the way, we're getting some of this history information from a place called Food on a Truck. And foodonatruck.com is really, it's a blog. It's information about how to start a business. It's got all kinds of information about somebody who would be interested in this kind of thing. But their history piece is excellent here. And now, Ben, I think you mentioned chuck wagons. And I felt I had to go back and describe who they were serving to in New York City.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And thank you for making it. I want to do one side note before we get to chuck wagons. In the 1850s, dining cars existed on trains.
Oh.
So that's a similar idea, but it's different because these dining cars, of course, cannot come off the tracks, right?
Yeah.
So this big innovation occurs in 1866. A guy with this awesome name, Charles Goodnight, creates what we call the chuck wagon.
Charles Goodnight, who was a Texas cattle rancher,
mm-hmm.
and he modified army wagons, and he fitted the interior with storage drawers and kitchenware and food supplies, and that is the invention, the birth of the chuck wagon.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we can all picture what a chuck wagon is, right? And then someone else got the bright idea that, you know, six years later, someone else got the bright idea that they would take the chuck wagon and they would create windows on the side of the chuck wagon,
uh-huh.
you know, because right then it was all covered, of course.
Right.
And they modify this, and they would sell sandwiches and pies and coffee and things like that to a very specific group of people. It was journalists outside of a newspaper office in Providence, Rhode Island.
And the reason that's important is because the original chuck wagon design was more for cowboys, honestly. Ranchers moving herds across the plains of Texas.
Well, and I wonder how often, you know, some of the people that were headed out west to strike it rich also would come across these and decide that, you know, I wonder if they paid them ever for their chuck wagon services, you know, along the way. Like, you know, we've run out of food.
Oh, yeah.
I wonder if that ever happened. Maybe it did.
I would be surprised if it did not.
Yeah, kind of sharing. You know, if you're on a cattle drive and you got a chuck wagon with you,
yeah,
and here comes a party of people that can't feed themselves because, you know, for whatever reason, storms
yeah,
or whatever.
Yeah, you have to trade,
yeah,
barter.
I'm sure that happened along the way. Probably both directions, I would guess,
mm-hmm.
right?
And because of those sorts of conditions, the menu was not exactly what you would imagine when you see those chic new food trucks in the modern age. We're talking stuff like beans, salted meat, sourdough biscuits, and coffee.
Yeah, just about anything that you could keep without refrigeration, really.
Exactly.
And of course, you know, of course we know that the cattle ranchers, the people doing the cattle drives, had a bit of an advantage. They could use the cattle, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose somebody headed out west could also use the oxen if they needed to. I mean, that's a pretty desperate situation when you're doing that.
And the last thing I will say about chuck wagons in the modern day is they are still around. And, you know, the history has left an impression on the American West. There's also chuck wagon racing. I just want to leave everybody with that one.
That sounds like a state fair activity.
It's in rodeos in Canada primarily.
That sounds like fun. I would watch that.
Yeah, like the Calgary Stampede features chuck wagon racing. You can also see it in Arkansas. And I don't know. I'd like to hear from you listeners if you have ever seen chuck wagon racing.
I wonder how cutthroat it is. Is it like the old Roman chariot races that we think of, or is it like a bigger, slower, lumbering version of that?
Right. I had never seen this before we began researching for this show. And so one of my first questions was, is it a straight race, or do they have to stop and, like, cook partway through?
I bet there are turns involved, I would think.
Yeah.
If I had to guess,
yeah.
Like a run on a horse track, maybe.
Yeah.
And I would guess, you know, they're probably talking about teams of horses, so it must be
yes.
a fast thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I bet they're pretty quick.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to check it out. And actually, once we're off the air, I'm going to go into a rabbit hole on YouTube and see if I can. This might be big for me, man. Maybe I can get into chuck wagon racing.
Maybe. Or chuck wagon modifications. You know, like you could work in the pits.
Right.
If they have pits. I guess they would have pits. All right. So
yeah.
We've got this modified version. It's around 1872. Mm-hmm. And this guy named Thomas Buckley starts manufacturing different models of these chuck wagons that have sinks, refrigerators, mm-hmm. and cooking stoves. This is back in the 1870s. And this guy, he's a former lunch counter boy in Worcester, Massachusetts. And he starts creating these really fancy models of these chuck wagons. And there's three different names for the ones that he created. There's one called the Owl. There's one called the White House Cafe. And there's another one called the Tile Wagon. And I guess that these were really, like, over the top decorated and things.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They had, of course, tiled walls. They had stained glass windows in some mm-hmm. cases.
Brass spittoons.
Yeah, gas lamps and, you know, mosaics on the wall with, mm-hmm. you know, that tile design that I mentioned. It's just, it's strange to think about this happening in the 1870s. Now, I know they had things like that, but I didn't know that they had mobile food services that had
right.
such ornate designs. It was something you don't see in the Westerns when you watch.
Yeah, and briefly, I don't know if I'm jumping ahead too much, but briefly, the evolution of food trucks took a backward step, because as we approach the early 1900s, the trucks that were once wheeled turn into just mobile dining cars, and then later that becomes the origin of something that we have today, an example of which is probably in your town, and that is the diner.
The diner? Yeah, well, that's right. You're right. Yeah, because they often look like they are a like an old rail car
right.
that is parked on a parking lot. Sometimes they have that silver streamlined look, and the windows all the way across mm-hmm. the whole side. A lot of those diners do have an appearance and look like an old dining car,
and that's how it started. Which I think it is fascinating, because we're seeing a parallel evolution here. The story is by no means done.
Yeah, you know what? And here's the other thing is that. I think, I don't know the exact origin of this, because I didn't look this up specifically, but I never really thought of an ice cream truck as being a food truck, but an ice cream truck is a food truck. And
smokes, you're right.
I don't know when the first ice cream trucks appeared, and I just didn't look it up before we came in here, but ice cream trucks are a food truck. They're a mobile food service, so that
yeah.
they're a legitimate food truck. I don't know when that happened, but it's mentioned here in this history of somewhere between, you know, the early 1900s and the 1950s. So
yeah.
I would guess that somewhere in there. But in the 1960s, they started to take a different twist.
Side note, Scott, have you ever seen inside the ice cream truck vans that roll around suburbs?
Are you talking about the ones that are like almost like old custom vans that people turned into ice
cream
trucks.
They look kind of sketchy on the inside.
So they're not like the Mr. Softy vehicles that, you know, were custom built, like purpose built ice cream trucks.
No. I'm talking about the independent operators.
Yeah, those are a little sketchy.
Those are a little, and I never noticed it when I was a child.
I don't know if they were around when we were children. I don't know. Cause it seemed like they were mostly the factory fleet vehicles.
Yeah, maybe you're right.
I know what you're saying. I've seen the newer versions,
with the decals on it.
Yeah, like the big plate glass window removed, and you know the huge side window, and then like that's where they just lean out and serve ice cream. It's iffy. I guess.
I couldn't drive one of those. The song would make me go nuts.
Yeah, probably.
Well, concurrently, outside of major Eastern universities, sausage vendors start selling out of carts, which become known as dog wagons. Also, we cannot forget that World War One occurs. And this...
World War One?
Yeah.
Well, okay, so we're going way back to 1917, is that right?
Yeah, exactly. The U.S. Army had mobile canteens or field kitchens to feed troops. And it's a similar concept, but it's a little different, of course.
Yeah.
And then 1936, you'll love this one, man. This one we can't miss. 1936, Oscar Mayer rolls out the first portable hot dog cart, the very first Wienermobile.
Really? So it's a portable cart?
Yeah, it looks different. Oh, okay. Here, I have a picture for
Interesting.
You.
Interesting. That's okay.
It's much smaller.
Well, it looks like the Oscar Mayer Wienermobile, but a push cart.
Right, yeah. And so then, as you said, we have the ice cream trucks, but there's another thing that you and Rudy were talking about in your correspondence, roach coaches.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So a lot of people will associate early food trucks with the term roach coach. Now, Rudy and I mentioned this back and forth because I said something about it, or maybe he did. I don't remember which. He said, I think I remember them calling them this. And I said, yeah, that's a good memory because my dad had used these types of trucks at, you know, like television stations that he worked at or whatever. You know, they pull up into the back lot and serve, but they'd say all the roach coaches, you know, in the back lot, come back out and get your lunch or whatever. And the studio that I worked at for a while, in Detroit, they would have what the old style roach coach would pull up as well. It looked like a camper on the back with, you know, like the fold up, doors on each side.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they had chips and a few sandwiches that were, you know, preheated and just kind of sitting there.
Right.
Not the greatest conditions, but those are the ones that that's the origin of the term roach coach comes from like the 1960s. And that's, when, you know, these bigger food trucks, I guess, that were on the back of pickups started selling things like tacos and burgers, and they would go to construction sites and factories and places like that. And they did get this bad reputation because they had substandard health practices and, you know, like they were dirty. Overall, they were dirty. I mean, because they weren't regulated. They didn't have, or if they were, there wasn't the type of inspections that happened today. It was different back then. And they would get this, bad term, you know, roach coach associated with them.
Yeah. It's not a compliment. Spoiler.
No, it's definitely not. So, Ben, if we want to move this up into the modern day, I suppose, even going back maybe 15 years up until present day, you got to understand that a lot of restaurant chefs have been losing their jobs. You know, the recession's been tough on a lot of people. The economy's been rough here, at least in the States and, well, really worldwide.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of prominent chefs have lost their jobs and, you know, what are they going to do? They're not going to go to work at, you know, a fast food place.
Mm-hmm.
Some probably have, but that's not what they want to do, really. They want to cook and create something, you know, unique, original, something that's that they can serve to somebody with pride, I guess, you know,
right.
and they'll enjoy. And you know, they can have this conversation back and forth about, you know, what they've done and what they can do to make it better, et cetera. And this is a perfect opportunity for them to do this if they start a food truck business because they're right there with their audience, with their crowd, the people that are eating their food. They can have a face-to-face conversation with someone who samples their wares, you know, maybe two or three times a week.
Yeah, have finger on the pulse. Get out in the streets. Mingle with the people.
Yeah, you tend to build a real relationship with your customers if they're regular customers. And if you have a schedule with your food truck that takes you somewhere else every day, you're not going to build that, but you still will have that sense of pride that you're cooking what you want to on your own schedule, on your own terms.
Well, there's also a bit of a bringing the mountain to Muhammad logic behind this because real estate is often described as being about three things, and all three of those things are described as being location. Let's just get this out of the way. For anyone who is not familiar with the restaurant industry, it is a cutthroat business. Those people out there, from the chef to the sous chef to the dishwasher to the person who just seems to always be hanging out there, and you're pretty sure they work there, but you don't know what they're doing, I guarantee you those people are all busting their humps. It is a very difficult business.
Yeah.
And it's been said before, you know, that restaurants have a shelf life. And part of that shelf life may be due to the fact, well, of course, that, you know, people will age and people will retire and stuff like that. But also, the restaurant is only in one place, and people have to go to that one place. But if you have a food truck and there's a crowd on the other side of the town for, I don't know, let's make something up, for Bluegrass Festival, then you can just hop in the truck. And we're way oversimplifying this, but you can move to find the people.
Sure, yeah. And we'll tell you why that's an oversimplification in just a minute, because there's more to it than that. But you're right that, and okay, there's a lot of different angles here too, in that you say every restaurant has a shelf life. Some do, some I feel don't. Like the classic diner maybe doesn't, because it serves the classics. It has the meatloaf, it has the grilled cheese, it has hamburgers, mm-hmm. it has a chicken sandwich, you know, mm-hmm. that type of thing. These food trucks, you know, they can be, they're adaptable. Some places open up and they're more, you know, cutting edge, you know, the nouveau cuisine, you know, and, and, it's whatever the latest trend is. And those to me are the ones that are kind of like, you know, they open today, gone tomorrow type places. It happens unless they adapt and change along mm-hmm. with the needs. And that's one thing that food trucks are really, really good at, is that on the fly, they can change what they serve. Mm-hmm. They can adapt it. They can also take it in slow steps if they want, but they're a lot more flexible with the menu. And part of the reason behind that is that typically the person who owns a food truck is the person who's on the food truck cooking.
Right.
That's the top chef. The person who owns the restaurant, you know, that puts out the same menu every night is not typically the chef. And the chef and the owner might have, you know, words about, you know, what should be cooked that evening or even that month or, you know, for the upcoming season or what, you know,
sure,
whatever. There's always
that
argument that happens there, because restaurants are exceedingly expensive. So the people that own restaurants aren't necessarily the people that also cook in the restaurants. They might just be a business partner, and they might have a differing idea of what should be served. Mm-hmm. They're not adapting to the market as quickly. And I know that's a broad brush to paint this whole thing.
Sure.
And I don't even pretend to completely understand the food industry at all. But I do understand that, you know, these mobile food service vehicles can be a lot more flexible and they can evolve a lot faster than mm-hmm. a brick-and-mortar restaurant can.
And many restaurants, especially now, many restaurants that are brick-and-mortar stationary restaurants have purchased or acquired a food truck so that they can send their truck out to things to popularize them.
You know, you're touching on something that I want to get to eventually. There's a short list of 10 things that I kind of want to go through quick, but it's a list of things that food trucks won't tell you.
Oh, right? I know this list.
You know, or people that own food trucks won't tell you, I guess. And one of the things, and it's the last thing on the list, so I'm okay with telling you this. A lot of people don't understand that restaurants do own food trucks, and not just like the trendy restaurants in town, you know, the cafes and things like mm-hmm. that. We're talking like Taco Bell owns a truck, Sizzler has a truck. You know, there's a lot of trucks that are owned by companies that you just would never ever expect. I mean, Dunkin' Donuts has a truck. I mean, I know that's not a restaurant, but you know, like the Philly mm-hmm. Connection has a truck for their cheesesteaks.
Yeah.
Pizza Hut has a truck. So some people don't get this because, some of these trucks have gone to the extent of changing the name of the truck so that the association in people's heads doesn't get tied to the truck business. Now, I think that's a bit dirty, but I understand what they're saying when they do this. And this is coming from this article again. Where did I find this? I found it in MarketWatch from a couple of years ago. It's a few years old, but it still stands up. The Sizzler truck is called the ZZ truck, you know, from the two Z's in the middle of Sizzler.
Yeah.
And the reason they do that is because they don't want old memories, you know, people's idea of that chain of restaurants to be in their head when they're buying this new product, because they really do have some new stuff. They have new recipes, new menu items, updated versions of old classics.
Sure. It's a great way to test what's popular.
Yeah. And it's a way to reach new customers that normally wouldn't walk into a Sizzler, but they will walk up to a food truck. And the thing is, like, maybe they do, you know, get some old customers that go to the food truck and they win back those old customers that might have bad memories of what Sizzler was in the past, even though Sizzler, I think, is trying to change their overall image anyways right now. But it's an interesting look at, you know, how that all works. And I guess, you know, places like Taco Bell and, you know, Pizza Hut and things, they just do what they normally do in the restaurants at the food truck as well. I don't think they're adapting that much to you know, the market needs or whatever.
Right, right.
They're already doing that at their brick and mortar
They're
places.
Not all of a sudden going to make wontons or something.
No, but like an older business like Sizzler, they have a lot to gain by getting out there, you know, to get new people in and maybe, again, like they said, change the minds of some of their older customers as well. Mm-hmm. So maybe we'll talk about that list later. There's some interesting things there.
Yeah, so we have a couple of things we can talk about as we go. You want to just go the modern day?
Yeah, sure. Let's do that, because what a crazy thing this has become, really. I mean, we see them everywhere. They're on street corners. They're at festivals. They block off streets in the middle of towns to have food truck events. We at our office for a while. We relied on food trucks every day before the food court was open in our building.
Right. Yeah. Those were glory days as well, because if you caught the right food truck, you could grab lunch for, here's my line. I don't like to buy lunch. I feel like I have somehow messed up in my personal planning if I don't bring a lunch. But my limit is $10.
Okay.
I can't go over $10.
Reasonable.
And it can be tough because there's some higher end, restaurants in the area. But if you guys ever feel like visiting Scott and I, then I'll show you the ropes. There's a great pizza place nearby where you can eat like a king for like $8. But don't blow up my spot because I don't want the rest of the building to find out about it.
Or all of Atlanta.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we do have a food court now.
Right.
And it's very pricey. But compared to what we have now, the food trucks were relatively inexpensive, even though, you know, you're paying a bit of a premium for the convenience.
Oh, or for the experience, which is why Taco Bell and Sizzler would rebrand themselves.
And we knew which trucks were going to be there every day because they had a social media presence where they would announce it.
Yeah.
They would schedule maybe three trucks to come, you know, at a different times during the week.
And so these food trucks would travel in packs as well, which, you know, it's just like when you see a bunch of car dealerships all clustered together in one strip, right? It's just a way to get somebody who is already planning on being interested in the product that you have.
Yeah, you think that's a mistake, but it's not a mistake in a lot of ways because, you know, you're bringing in more customers that way. You're able to, once somebody's already on the lot to buy a car, like you said, Ben, they might wander over to the next lot and decide they like that car better. And that's the same way with food trucks.
Right. And the modern food truck craze, which has been going on for several years now, can be traced largely to a guy named Roy Choi. He was based in Los Angeles at the time, and created a Korean taco truck. Los Angeles has a heck of a history with mobile food delivery.
Now, it's interesting that he would choose, like, Korean tacos for this, right? Barbecue tacos. Because to me, one of the classic street foods is tacos, of course. And it didn't always require an entire truck to make these tacos. You'd find vendors on the street, that have set up, you know, just nothing more than a few aluminum boxes, it looked like, you know, on the front of a bike, you know, like an old push type cart.
Yeah.
And that's how they would make their tacos, or, you know, almost something akin to a hot dog stand, you know, with an umbrella over the top. But, for him to branch out and to actually, you know, have this truck where he could go long distances and serve the whole community, really.
Yeah.
Very smart.
So this was 2008. And as you said, the recession hit. So, food trucks become even more appealing because they're cheap eats in many cases, cheaper than a restaurant. And then also, if you want to open a restaurant to the point that you made earlier, Scott, and you can't afford the, frankly, significant amount of overhead and capital required to lease or rent or buy a building and renovate it and all that, you can do that in microcosm on a truck.
Yeah.
And
sure.
And so because of this, and because of this economic downturn, food trucks become more appealing to consumers and to owners. But then another thing happens that doesn't get enough credit, which is the ubiquitous nature of social media and cell phones, right? These things, if there's a food truck in your town, I guarantee you if they're one of the new school food trucks, they are on Twitter all the time.
Yeah, and they're going to be packed. There's usually a line at these things when they do show up because people know where they're going to be. They're announcing ahead of time that we're going to be at the corner of Elm and Maple at this time, and sure enough, there's going to be a crowd waiting for them when they arrive.
Yeah, and it might be super, super high-end stuff. It might be just the basics. Like, this is a great grilled cheese and fries place.
Yeah, that happens. And like we said, some people are, cooking $16 or $17 lobster rolls in their truck, and other people are making, $7 grilled cheese sandwiches. So there's a huge variety, and everything in between, of course. And there's probably some that even have more expensive fare than the $17 lobster roll.
Hold on.
Sure.
Sorry. $7 for a grilled cheese sandwich?
Okay, maybe.
What's on it?
Maybe, I don't know, maybe nothing.
I'm sorry, I'm not angry at you. I'm angry at the situation.
Can I be honest here?
Yeah, please.
I'm not a huge food truck user. I've tried it in the past, at festivals, things like that. And I know that they can be a little bit pricey, but the source material I'm looking at is a couple years old. That stuff is saying, you can get something between $7 and $20 maybe. I don't even know if that's the case anymore. Maybe the scale's been pushed to more like 10 to 22,
mm-hmm.
something like that. But yeah, you're probably right. I bet that the cost of, even simple fare like that is about $10. And that's reasonable, I guess. I mean, it's comparable to what you would find in a diner, maybe. If you were to just walk up to the counter and order something similar. I guess you have to compare apples to apples and oranges to oranges, right? I mean,
true.
And these people are trying to cover the margin of, the cost of, operating this whole thing, getting around town and, running, all the propane and the air conditioning and the refrigeration and all that stuff, that gets rolled into the price of the product.
Okay, yeah,
that's
part of the argument.
So that's one thing. But then again, you go to a brick and mortar place and they're rolling the rent.
Sure.
And,
the utilities.
All the utilities, you're right.
Right.
All the staff and
insurance,
everything.
Insurance.
What it pays to have, the lawn cut out front.
The rising price of avocados.
All of that stuff is rolled into the price of the food and it's just expected. So, I don't know, are you getting a better deal with a food truck or are you getting a worse deal?
I think it depends on what price we place on convenience because for instance, if you're just walking down the street somewhere and you're in a hurry, then you happen to see a food truck. This actually happened to me, Scott. It was some cheesesteak place. Now I'm wondering if it was a Philly cheesesteak food truck in disguise. But I love cheesesteaks. I was in a hurry. I was going to be about 2 minutes late for something. I hadn't eaten all day.
Yeah.
And I was walking through this gargantuan apartment complex. The streets between the buildings, and for no reason, there was a food truck.
Hmm.
It was like a sign from the gods of cheesesteaks and trucks.
That's a nice surprise.
Yeah, and it worked out perfectly. It's the only time that happened to me because it's a booming industry here in Atlanta, but it has some complications to Rudy's point. Which we'll get into the legal stuff, but where do you want to go with this?
Well, tell you what, how about this? I would love to talk about complications and regulations and rules and things like that.
And I want to talk about the vehicles themselves.
Yeah, I do too a little bit. How about this? I can run through a quick pros cons list maybe.
That's fantastic.
It seems like, and I'll do it as quick as I can here, but you understand that there are pros that we've talked about. There's also some drawbacks and listen to this list carefully. There's only about, four or five of each one. So
okay.
I'll try to go through quickly.
There might be a few we can add on the way.
We'll start with the pros. How about
okay.
that?
Okay. Yeah.
Let's keep it positive. So the advantages of owning a food truck might be, that there's, a few of these we talked about already. The relatively lower initial investment and operating costs.
Sure.
Compared to, opening a restaurant. It's understandable. I mean, like the first time entrepreneur, it's a way to also kind of jump in, get your toes wet, learn the landscape, as they say. Understand what's going to happen. Food trucks can also be kind of like a complementary addition to an established business. So
mm-hmm.
if you have a catering business, maybe that's one that we haven't even thought about.
Caterers right.
who want to branch out from just doing single events can go to, festivals or, just prowl the city during the
mm-hmm.
day and, sell to everybody every day. That's a great thing. It's like every day having a party.
Yes.
If you want to look at it that way, really. The third one here is it mentions the dynamic of the food truck business and how it's a bit different compared to running a restaurant or providing catering services because It's great for people who enjoy this really busy, active working environment, like something that's really just chaotic and crazy, and but you're getting the job done. You know, it's fun for some people to be in that type of situation. And if you're someone who likes that type of thing, you know, as an owner or as a chef or whatever, you know, you like the hustle and bustle in the kitchen, the activity, and some people really do, this is perfect for them. And again, you get to be face-to-face with the customers, so you get a lot of feedback, and I think that's got to be rewarding to a lot of people, you know, that you don't get that in the kitchen at the diner or at, you know, the TGI Fridays down the road.
Right, there's a little more distance often.
Yeah, how many times do you really get to see the person or talk to the person that cooks your food? You don't very often. If you want to compliment them, you have to call them from out of the kitchen to do so. Mm-hmm. I know it happens, but it's not very common, but on a food truck, that might happen every day several times. So that's another thing. And the fourth one here, is that one that we've already talked about, modifying products is a lot easier on food trucks because menus are designed to be uncomplicated but delicious, but it can be challenging and also enjoyable for an entrepreneur in that type of situation. You know, they want to change things. They want to be adaptable and flexible, but on a food truck, you can create these new products and deliver them a lot faster than you can if you have a brick-and-mortar place where you have to reprint menus every day or, you know, tell the whole staff how to adjust this and how to fix that, and it's a whole different ballgame, really.
Yeah.
The last one for the pros is that you just simply have the ability to participate in events like concerts or festivals that you normally would be completely discounted from unless that venue happens to be right across the street. If you've got a restaurant right near a ballpark, good for you. That's an excellent location, and you're going to get business every time there's a ball game in town. But what if you could also, you know, you could park a truck there near the ballpark and then the next day go down to, you know, the NFL, you know, the stadium where they're going to play the NFL game on Sunday.
Right.
And then you go to
the zoo or
the
something.
NFL game. Do you hear why I said that? I sound so hokey when I say stuff like that. So anyway, you understand what I mean.
Yes.
You can go to the zoo. You could also, you can go to music festivals, as we said. I would guess that, you know, if there's, churches or schools having events at places, you can park outside of those.
You could go to protest. I'm kidding.
Well, honestly, you can. You can do stuff like that. I mean, putting yourself in a little danger maybe in some situations. But,
I guess it depends on what they're protesting.
Park outside. Like if you know there's going to be a prison riot that day, you could park nearby, just hope for some, you know,
oh, wow.
Some of the runoff.
I don't know if those are the customers you want.
Maybe not. All right, so let's quickly go through the cons, and then we'll move on to some of the other interesting things. More interesting things. How about that?
What are you talking about?
I don't know. Sometimes when I say things, I think, like, what did I just say? I said, let's move on to something interesting now.
Oh, this is a cool side note. I don't know if we've ever talked about this, and I'm interested to see if this ever happens to you guys as well. Sometimes when I say something that is especially awkward, which has happened probably 3 or 4 times this morning already, I have this pause and this internal monologue, like that kid on the Wonder Years. Mm-hmm. And I always think, what if I'm struck by a meteorite or have an aneurysm or a heart attack? And my last words were going to be, yeah, I guess canned vegetables are okay. Or something, you know what I mean?
It's like when you say, like, let's move on to something more interesting. And then you go, right at that moment, I realized that was the stupidest thing I've ever said in my life. You know, it's like a different voice almost in your head that picks up, like a narrator. I get it. All right, so cons.
Cons.
Let's talk about a few cons. We'll do them fast. So here's something that we've mentioned before, and maybe we didn't think about it the right way the first time we said it. Getting a food truck business started through a bank loan can be tough, and the reason is banks are skeptical about lending money because they think that the food truck thing is a trend, that it's going to go away.
It's a fad.
So when we talk about prices later, you know, and some of the stuff is coming from a few years ago, but they think it's a fad even back then, and it's still going strong. So I don't know how right this is or how accurate all this is, but it doesn't seem to be a fad. It seems to be growing, if anything, at this point.
It's growing despite local regulations.
Well, yeah, despite local regulations. That's right, because that's number two is the challenge is regulations. A lot of different states and municipalities have very clear rules regarding these mobile businesses, the food businesses, but others have no such thing. You know, they're completely
wild
different
west,
between cities, between counties, between states. Mm-hmm. It's all very different. So, you have to research and contact the relevant agencies based on where you're going to be that day or that week or that month or where you just intend to operate in general to understand what kind of licensing needs you have and et cetera. And it can be very complicated. So
right.
That's one thing.
Yeah, right. Here's one example just for our textbook case here. In Washington, D.C., health inspectors, of course, will check out your vehicle. They'll also verify that you have the following: proof of ownership, proper ID, vehicle license, proof of district-issued food manager identification card, food purchase record storage and record keeping, a depot, commissary, or service support facility that meets vending unit operation needs, a copy of license for this facility, and an inspection report. That's the paperwork. That's just the paperwork alone.
Well, there's way more than this
if you go
between different states, too.
Right,
because here,
right.
I'll give you another example, and this comes from our 10 Things They Won't Tell You list. I was going to save this for later, but it's a perfect time for it now. They're not all held to the same standards.
At all.
As we said, you know, from state to state or even from city to city or county to county. So regulators, for the most part, in all areas, require food vendors to have hot and cold running water, a refrigerator, and to be able to dispose of waste properly. But you know, some of these specific rules can differ. Like in Los Angeles, food trucks must also park within 200 feet of a bathroom where workers can wash their hands. That sounds pretty strict.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that's something, a situation you're not going to find very, you know, all that often. In southern Nevada, all food handlers must be certified in food safety, but in some cities, only part of the staff must be certified. Hmm. In New York City, restaurants are given letter grades following health inspections, but not food trucks. So food trucks aren't held to the same standards as restaurants are in New York City. And then in L.A., food trucks also get graded, so they get the letter grade as well. So that differs between L.A. and New York. There's all kinds of this stuff happening. And,
right.
Ben, there's more to it than just that. I mean, another one off of this top 10 list is that one of the things they say is we're not supposed to be here. And
right.
It's funny because, you know, it's strange because of how many there are. You know, every year it seems like there's more and more of these things on the road. But in parts of Nevada, the trucks have to relocate every 30 minutes. That's another kind of crazy rule. I didn't know that was a law. Every 30 minutes, no matter what, they have to pick up and go. In Washington, D.C., the food trucks are technically supposed to move out of a spot once the line that they're serving clears. So the last person in the line gets to the front of the line and they're served.
Yeah.
Technically, they have to leave. They can't just sit and wait for more customers to arrive.
Which is strange.
And in New York City, last year, they pushed a lot of food trucks out of the Midtown Manhattan area by enforcing a decades-old rule of banning vending machines, or not vending machines, but banning vending from metered parking spaces. So if it's a metered parking space, even though they're paying for that space, they can't stay there. They're unable to. So they have to stay in areas that are free parking and try to find free parking in downtown Manhattan for a food truck. I mean, it's hard enough to find it for a small car. So these tight restrictions, these different laws, I mean, a lot of times you find that they have to park illegally. And they know they're parking illegally, but they have to do it, otherwise they're not going to make any sales. And there's even one other kind of crazy one, and I don't know if I have the state or the city that this is in, but there's some law in the books, and it's like a 30 or 40-year-old law again, where you have to be hailed in order to stop the food truck. So the food truck's only able to pass through town unless somebody weighs it down and says, hey, tacos or whatever. Hey, ribs. And you know what they call it?
What?
It's going to make sense when you hear it. It's called the ice cream rule.
Oh.
Because
yeah.
You've seen this. Ice cream trucks drive through the neighborhood,
right.
And until somebody yells out, ice cream, you know, or whatever they yell out.
They just keep cruising.
Yeah, they just keep going. And, it, you know, it's a fun game when you're a kid to yell ice cream and then hide. And then see him stop.
You monster.
Well, I did when I was a kid. Yeah, it was fun. It was a fun game. You would hide behind a bush, and then the guy would drive by, and you'd yell, ice cream! And he would stop, and he'd wait there for about a minute, you know, looking around, and then he'd start to move again and yell, ice cream again! And he'd stop a second time, but that was it. Then it was done.
How that guy must have hated
I know, and I think after a while, you know, in that area, the guy just kept moving on. But that is called the ice cream rule, and this is critical because remember we talked about social media?
Yeah.
And we'll get back to the cons in a second.
Yeah.
Social media helps this rule because whatever city that was in, I can't remember where it was, they said that by having people on the premises when they arrive, that's the same as hailing them down. That's the same as them telling them to stop because they want the service. So they schedule the stop. People arrive ahead of time. There's a pool of people waiting. they're able to then park and then serve those people. If they weren't there, they can't just stop in the parking lot for no reason.
Uh-huh.
So the social media thing has helped them out a lot in that case with the old ice cream rule.
That's a really good point.
Weird, huh?
How that
all ties together. So back to the cons, and we'll do this quick because I want to move on to some important stuff here with the trucks themselves. Finding the right truck and then finding also a commercial kitchen can take time and money. Now, that's pretty important, finding a commercial kitchen, because that ties into a rule that you know about, right? About the cooking.
Right. So in some places, Atlanta being one of those places, it is illegal to prepare food from scratch, essentially, on the truck.
You can't really cook. You're just reheating.
Well, you can prep. You can do some stuff, but you can finish, I guess, a dish, but the actual from scratch part of it occurs typically offsite.
Well, I find this fascinating because here's the thing. The food trucks range anywhere from 30,000 to more than 100,000, of course, with all their equipment and everything.
Right.
But then in addition to that, you're going to require a commercial kitchen somewhere, and it has to be a kitchen that can be inspected, and it can be a purpose-built place for your own business, an individual that can own this place.
Yeah, yeah.
But a lot of them share a commercial kitchen space.
Yeah.
And they prepare food ahead of time for their daily needs.
And this is going to bother me if I don't say it, because I think we need to be honest here. Let me phrase this as a question for you, Scott, and for you listeners. Do you believe that the enforcement of this legislation comes from restaurant lobbies?
I absolutely do.
I'm glad that it's not just some conspiracy theory cooking in my head, man.
No, it's not. They butt heads all the time.
Because it reminds me again of Tesla and dealership lobbies.
Yeah.
And we looked at the conflicting interest between Tesla's model and the orthodox car selling model. And now I'm wondering, are restaurants in some parts of at least the states banding together to fight the rise of food trucks?
It's funny though, because they've had this contentious relationship since way before 1866 with the chuck wagons, even.
Uh-huh.
Since it was street carts, our vendors pushing a cart on the road, or on the street rather, they've had the idea that they're stealing business from the restaurants. And are they or are they not? I mean, how can you measure that? Are these people that would have gone into a restaurant, a sit-down restaurant, or even a diner where you just order at the counter? Or is it something that they just wouldn't have taken the time? They just wouldn't have eaten lunch that day. Maybe that's it.
Well, yeah, but there's also, I can see the restaurant side. For instance, let's consider this hypothetical situation. You own a restaurant. Well, I own a restaurant. Okay. We'll call it Ben's Bon Me Burgers or something. And I've had this restaurant for a while. It's doing pretty well. We get a big lunch rush.
Sure.
Lines out the door. People love these Bon Me Burgers. And all of a sudden, I see some joker driving some step van called Scott Snake Shack pulling up right across the street, pulling my customers away to get, to get the fried alligator bites.
Or how about this? How about I even show up with a burger truck? So it's direct competition.
Yeah.
What are you going to do about that? I mean, that's a serious issue. I mean, it really is. I get that if they're parked within a certain distance,
you
are going to draw new people. Well, in the restaurant, I'm going to have to wait for a table, or it's going to take 45 minutes for me to from start to finish.
Right.
Or I could walk up to the truck and get my burger in 5 minutes and eat as I walk to the next meeting or whatever you're doing. Pros and cons of both, I suppose.
I mean,
sometimes you want to sit down, and sometimes you want to go inside and have the air conditioning and have the service. You want to experience that whole thing.
Time,
yeah, exactly right. I mean, there's a need for all of that. I totally get it. So, again, back to the con, just so we can understand what we're talking about one more time, is that you either have to get, in addition to the food truck, which is a cost, of course, you have to have a shared use commercial kitchen or a private commercial kitchen. And then also keep up with inspections on that.
Right.
So, it's still another large investment. So the last con here on the list is that, and as we've mentioned many times, is that the mobile food industry is very competitive and margins are really, really low in a lot of cases. So, the cost of operating the business is oftentimes more than what you make during the day. So that's a problem for a lot of people. But the other thing that we're not thinking about, we haven't even mentioned yet, is that this business is also weather dependent.
Ooh, good call, Scott.
So, you know, Minneapolis, where Rudy is talking about all these food trucks, that's a different situation than here in Atlanta, where it's pretty much a 12-month business.
Right.
And you can operate 12 months out of the year. Up there, you might be able to operate realistically 8 months out of the year.
And that's
pushing it.
Or places that will have high temperatures at times, like Phoenix.
Sure, that's right.
You know?
And yeah, so there's that. I mean, and not only that, but I mean, everybody's affected by things like rain. Or, you know, of course, snow is another thing. We talked about seasonal differences, but rain or just foul weather. You're not going to go out in a hailstorm or a lightning storm to a food truck. You're gonna find a brick and mortar place or go to a drive through somewhere if you're in it for just a fast lunch.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So there's that angle that we're not even thinking about. But Ben, let's move on from the cons. I mean, there's probably 100 more pros and cons on both sides.
Yeah, and we've talked about so at this point we have talked about the history. We've talked about the pros. The cons, we've talked about the legal situation, which, as you can tell, listeners, irks me to no end, and I'm working assiduously not to go on a rant about what a load of malarkey it is, but malarkey nonetheless in the way these laws are being applied, not to make any sweeping argument about the consequences of overregulation. But let's talk about the trucks themselves, because this is so cool.
Yeah, I agree. And there's a few manufacturers that are creating these, the more cutting edge trucks, the ones that we see, you know, with the modern wraps on them and, you know, the bold designs and, you know, the innovative, maybe even innovative exteriors. You know, it looks like a pig on the outside with ears and a snout or something, you know, sandwiches. Some crazy designs that are out there too. And there's one that I came across, and I'm going to use this one as my example, and you can look this one up if you'd like and follow along or however you want to do it, or just look into it later. Prestige Food Trucks. Now, they're the world's leading food truck manufacturer, according to their site. I'm not sure if that's true or not, but right. I got to say, they've got a lot of clients. They've got, you know, Johnny Rockets and the U.S. Army and Brewster's Ice Cream and Nathan's Hot Dogs and Harrah's and the Navy and Texas Roadhouse. It's all across the board. It's a little bit of everything. They provide, you know, the big box type trucks that you would normally associate with food trucks now, modern food trucks. They've got smaller versions as well. They even have carts and trailers. They have all that stuff. And if you're looking for, you know, a custom built truck, that's something they can do. They can build one from the ground up. Any floor plan you want, any appliance you want of any kind, they'll do it. It's just a matter of cost at that point. They've been featured on shows like How It's Made, so you can watch them doing this. They've been on CNBC and, you know, food truck, I think it's called Food Truck Face Off, which is, you know, of course, it's exactly what you think, one of those Food Network type shows. Just a lot of variety, I guess, in this place. You can have, you know, really, really simple, or you can have really, really complex. And the current inventory, the ones that they have already built, I was looking through the prices on some of these, and they've got one that was almost like a salon type vehicle. They call it a fashion truck, and it has, you know, like things like hair washing sinks. And so it's not really a food truck, but that was the lowest end vehicle they had. And that was $40,000. And it's a modern truck. You know, it's big and new, and it's got a lot of flash to it, I guess.
Right.
But it's a different thing. It's not for food. One of the biggest food trucks that I saw, or the most expensive food truck, and they've got everything in between. So it's, you know, $40,000 to this price, $165,000 for one of these. And I would guess that they can go north from there as well, you know, depending on what you want. But this one looked pretty nice, I got to say. It was a 22-foot food truck, had just about anything and everything you wanted. Deep fryers, you know, a grill, a stove. It had air conditioning. It had a refrigerator, generators. It had everything, and it was spotless, you know, stainless steel, spotless kitchen. Really, really nice truck. But, again, $165,000, that's a lot of money. To try to get from the bank for a loan, or if you have that money as a startup, you know, that's another thing. But I don't know. It's an interesting place. And they do all their manufacturing right there in Elkhart, Indiana, which is in northern Indiana. It's on the border practically. They have offices in Orlando and in Bridgewater, Pennsylvania. So, you know, it's a national store, a national business. Again, you can look into it and see what they've got there, but you would be surprised with the variety that you can actually get within that small space.
I'd also like to recommend a website called Food Truck Empire, which has a cool section on how people can build DIY food trucks.
Oh, I like this idea.
Mm-hmm. So first step, you need to determine your layout and your equipment. There's a lot of research that goes into every step of this. And we found some floor plans for typical, you know, starting floor plans for food trucks, right? Like, let's say you take a, I keep going back to the example of a step van.
Yeah.
Just step van, window cut in the side, maybe a display case to hold drinks.
So relatively small.
Relatively small. We're talking like, some of the plans might have a couple of work tables, one that's 72 by 24, you know, a griddle 18 inches or so. And, the thing is, you have to have a fire suppression system. You have to have commercial grade stuff. And it's jammed into a very small area. It's very well designed. Like, if you have ever been inside a well-done RV,
yeah,
and noticed how every space has multiple functions.
You know, I've got a tiny bit of experience with this, but it's not even a food truck.
What is it?
A long time. Remember, I've told you many times I would spend summers on the farm in Indiana.
Yeah.
My uncle, at some point during that, you know, we go to horse shows and state fairs and, you know, the county fair and all that, and show animals. And when we go to these horse events, he decided that it would be a good idea if he sold tack. You know, items for horses, whatever they need. And he bought an old Frito-Lay truck, like a delivery truck, really old. And this is back in maybe the early 80s, late 70s, early 80s. And he designed the interior of it so that it was very smart, you know, that he could hang everything that he needed to. And it was like, it was a real effort to get everything that he wanted into that van. But he did it, and it was smart. I mean, you laid out the floor plan, you decide what you need and where you want to put it. And it's the exact same thing with food trucks, is that, you know, you have a certain minimum requirement, and you have to get this much material into this space. How are you going to do it? And is there a better way to do it? Can you find something that's newer, that's smaller?
Right.
We'll do the same thing, but you don't want to give up the griddle space. You want that bigger, but you want to have enough refrigerator space. But
yeah,
it's like this give and take all the time. And how can you be innovative and do that in a different way, get you the most for your buck?
It's Tetris. In a real way.
Yes, very good.
So you can also on this website check out some stem to stern videos of taking a gutted van and then putting this equipment in and the planning that goes into it. And I recommend checking that out, because one of my favorite ways to learn about modification for a vehicle is to watch it happening. I'm not clever enough to read a paragraph, or to read, you know, a step by step guide and really get it.
So you can't visualize it that well.
It just makes more sense to me if, you know, I see somebody up to their elbows in the guts of a vehicle.
So more hands on for you then.
Yeah.
Okay.
For sure.
I get it. You know what? That's one of the scenes in that movie that we talked about, Chef. And I know they do it in a fast version, but
like a montage.
But they go to the place where they build these, and, you know, here's what you can get, but here's what you can afford. And,
right.
You know, it's a great disappointment. But then they spend a lot of time cleaning up the old one. And I won't give away the movie if you want to watch it, because it's actually a pretty good movie. It's better than I thought it would be. But, It's a pretty interesting look at, you know, what your expectations are, like what you think you're going to get and what you do get, and the effort that it takes to put it back together and make it something workable. And I think a lot of people are in that position where they either have to do a DIY or buy a really old one that, you know, requires a lot of work.
Right.
And put that elbow grease into it to make it yours.
And safety considerations are huge.
Go ahead. Finish with your safety.
I was going to say safety considerations are huge, because we have seen explosions of propane tanks and stuff.
That's true. We mentioned a few of those early on.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes, like, explosions big enough to damage 11 houses, apparently, in one of these. You know, I mean, we're talking about some major stuff. So you're carrying propane, and it's like, it's like the safety that you'd require on an RV as well, you know, the same thing.
And don't let those stories spook you, folks. They are isolated incidences.
Yeah.
They emphasize again how important it is to stay on your toes about the safety concerns?
And all this points to, is that a licensed truck or is that an unlicensed truck? Because there are a lot of unlicensed trucks out there. And, you know, we're going so many different directions here. I want to say so many things, but there are a lot of unlicensed food vendors out there, which the, Food and Drug Administration finds very troubling, as you can imagine. And the funny thing is that if they're using social media to get fans to come and meet them at places, guess who meets them at the spot there? Health inspectors. So, you know, a lot of times they get shut down that way. Or, you know, and then they'll find that some of these unlicensed people will open up shop again later that week, which is a terrible idea, you know, because you're going to get a super huge fine at that point, if not an even bigger legal problem.
Sure.
So, okay, here's one thought that I had while we were talking about building.
Yes.
What if you took a food truck to a custom hot rod shop?
Oh, man.
And had them designed just like the ultimate food truck. And I've seen a version of this in Seattle that I think was built by a hot rod shop. I wish I could remember the name of this thing. It's a food truck that's silver. It looks like a pig. It has big ears. And I mentioned it earlier on. It has sunglasses. It has a big snout on the front. We just happened across this thing in town.
And Maximus Minimus.
That's it. That's the one. You're right. It's the very one. And I saw that one in person just purely by accident in downtown Seattle. And I've only been there one time. And for a couple of days, and we were touring the market there and, you know, then off on, you know, some other trip, but, it was really impressive. I mean, I stared at it for a long time. I think I took a few photos with my own cell phone, of course.
Yeah.
But it is one of those unusual designs that, really stand out, and it makes it, I don't know if that draws anybody in, you know, if they're going to go to just a standard food truck, you know, that serves pork sandwiches, or they're going to go to this one that serves pork sandwiches. I wonder how that works. If it really works as like a marketing tool. I bet it does.
I bet I wouldn't be surprised, man. I'm glad that we're talking about the interesting designs because there are some fantastic, unique things going on in this world. One of my favorite designs for food trucks I've seen are the double-decker buses.
Oh, yes.
It's so cool.
You know,
but it's a little different because it's like a rolling restaurant.
Okay, I've heard this called a bus-tarant. Have you ever heard that?
No.
That's a term that was brand new to me, but when I was looking through that, remember that that history piece that we were reading that was called From the Food on a Truck blog?
Uh-huh.
They said the way that's evolved from chuck wagons and push carts to trucks and even bus-tarants. And I'd never heard of bus-tarant, but I totally get what it is. The only time I've ever eaten food off a bus, I think, was in Killarney, Canada. They have a bus that is permanently parked at a location. They serve like fish and chips and that type of thing.
Uh-huh.
But it's permanent. I don't think it ever moves. If it does, it doesn't move very far.
Mm-hmm.
And they cook on the bus. And I would guess that the idea, if you have it on a bus, a double-decker bus, you could also have seating.
Right. Yeah.
Which
absolutely.
Is really, that's an interesting idea.
I think if I were to have something like a food truck, I would want something like that. At least the idea of it. I'm sure it's absolute pain to drive. Plus, imagine putting a kitchen on one of those.
I just can't imagine, like, how, you know how you have to secure everything in a boat or an RV once you start to move? It just would be so enormous. Like, not only the kitchen that you'd have to deal with, you know, the oil and the grease and, you know, the waste and all that stuff that you would have on board, but you would also have to deal with, like, you know, the tables upstairs and the chairs and, you know, not wanting everything to tip over. And if you have any kind of, you know, ornamentation on the walls or, you know, on the table, like, you know, salt and pepper shakers, all of that stuff would have to come off before you moved. Everything would have to be bolted down, really.
Yeah, exactly. But given all these pros, cons, considerations, complications, lobbies fighting against the small business owner or fighting for their own small business, even given all this stuff, I still think food trucks are so cool. And I've been inside some of them. I've hung out and seen the process, like a day in the life kind of stuff for a video that we did previously with one of our coworkers and friend of the show, Kristen Conger from Stuff Mom Never Told You. We got together and did an episode of a show called Food Stuff where we looked at food trucks. And this is a fascinating phenomenon. I hope it continues. I want more street vendors. I know not everybody does. I want more food trucks. I want more food carts. I want to be about a 2-minute walk away from being able to eat something at all times. That's sort of my goal in life.
That's a good rule.
You got to dream big, man.
like these little oases that are just 2 miles away.
Two minutes
away. Walking. Okay, well, it's even closer. All right.
I would open up a sandwich shop here at the office if I didn't think that our boss would get mad at me.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, I watched all of those food stuff episodes, the videos. Very entertaining.
And
informative. I thought they were really good. So if our listeners would like to check out the food stuff episodes, a lot of them feature you. Do all of them feature you or just most?
It's a show that we did in...
It's been a while.
Yeah, it's been a while. It's just a little series we did because I can't remember if we both knew it was a good idea or if we both just thought it was a good idea because we were hungry.
Well, it featured, Joe was in there as Mr. Hot Sauce or something like that too.
Yeah, Joe McCormick.
Yeah, were you in that one as well, the hot sauce? I don't know if I remember that,
yep.
But the cheese, of course, food trucks, of course.
Mm-hmm.
There was some really good ones. So
it's a weird show.
It is, but it's fun to watch. It's entertaining. It's informative.
Thanks so much, man.
I like it a lot. So, I think our Car Stuff listeners would like it as well. And hopefully, today's topic, we took it in some different directions that maybe you didn't expect.
Yeah.
And hopefully a delightful direction that you maybe appreciated. But
I am so hungry right now.
Yeah, I am too. And, as we always say, there's a lot more to these than we're covering even here today. So, I don't know. Give your local food truck operator some business and some due as well, because it's a difficult business to be in.
And let us know what you think of the food trucks in your neck of the woods. Are they around? Let us know, especially also, if you would consider owning and operating one of these, because there's a lot more to it than simply, simply hopping in a van and handing people sandwiches down by the river.
In a van, down by the river, selling sandwiches. You're going to add that part. But I'd like to hear some best worst stories as well.
Ooh, that's a good call. And Scott, there's one other important question that you wanted to bring to the public, right?
It's vitally important. I need to know if you can get decent pizza out of a truck.
Let us know on Twitter and Facebook where we are CarStuff, HSW. And if you'd like to check out any of our earlier podcasts, you can listen to every single one at our website, carstuffshow.com. If you have a best/worst story or a suggestion for an upcoming topic or a food truck idea of your own,
or if you own a food truck,
then we'd like to hear from you. You can write to us directly. We are
carstuff@howstuffworks.com. Ben, I think I'm going to go get some pizza in a cone.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@HowStuffWorks.com.